This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Thank you very much, Roger, and good morning, world, as we come your way on every Saturday morning between 5 and 6 here on WGN Radio Chicago. The weather continues to be dry and drier, while in the south and southeast it continues to be wet and wetter. We'll be talking about the impact of diversity of weather that we have seen over the summer across the country. Getting very dry now in areas of the Midwest, and we're going to take a look at the drought monitor because it shows some interesting pictures on drought across the country. But the first thing I wanted to talk about this morning is something that comes up a week from tomorrow in McHenry County, which is where I live. It's called the McHenry County Farm Stroll. It's a self-guided tour of McHenry County's diversified family farms. No beginning or end of the tour. Just choose the farms you wish to visit and then go during the stroll's time frame. Now, there's no charge for farm stroll, however. Good advice, bring some cash because individual farmers will be selling products and produce. Some farms will conduct tours and demonstrations, and for your safety, follow the farmer's instructions. Be respectful of the animals. These are working farms. Have control over small children at all times and wash your hands after exposure to livestock. And don't bring pets, please. So you can visit McHenry County Farm Bureau at mchenrycfb.org. That's the McHenry, one word, cfb.org. And you can call 815-338-1520. So that's coming up a week from tomorrow, Sunday, September 24th. If we continue to have the weather that we're having, I'm sure you're going to be able to see fall colors because they're beginning to change, and it's a beautiful time to go to the country. Looking at the list of farms, just a few of them, because there are quite a few that have opened their farms for this event the past few years. And we've got Von Bergen's Country Market in Hebron. We've got Harvard Eggs, Feed and Produce in Harvard. And Cashmore's Produce and Ponies in Harvard. We've got Crosswinds Farm in Marengo, Cody's Farm and Orchard Marengo. Just an example of some of the farms that will be on the list. The time period, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., and that's next Sunday, September 24th. It's called the McHenry County Farm Stroll. I think it's a great idea. I wish more counties would do it so that you have an opportunity to see what farmers and their families do to raise food humanely and successfully. So mark it down, the 24th. Oh, and again, as I said, we're into the final two weekends of racing at Arlington Park, some other event that we enjoy very, very much. We're at 12 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and a look at the situation in hurricane country, because there's a lot going on. Of course, basically now it's finding cattle that have strayed away as fences have been taken out. And a lot of people don't realize that the state of Florida is the sixth biggest cattle-raising state in the country. And they were hard hit with the hurricane and the flooding and the problems it created for the livestock. So that is a situation that we're looking at now. We're not the only ones. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will travel to Florida on Monday to survey agricultural damage from Hurricane Irma. The secretary invited to make the trip to examine storm damage by Florida Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam. And so he is going to be in the Orlando, Florida area, and he'll be there on Monday, and he will then visit some other areas of the Southeast to take a look firsthand at the damage. The Department of Agriculture has a lot of programs that are available for people who are fighting the after effects of Hurricane Harvey and Hurricane Irma. So we'll get into that in detail a little bit later as well. We're at 14 minutes after 5 o'clock, and this vignette coming your way from the Farm Progress Show. Well, we are into harvest time here in the Midwest. Not heavily into harvest time, but our downstate reporter who checks in about every day with his observations checked in to say he still has lots of friends that farm in Christian County, Macon, and Shelby as well. And in the early corn harvested there, running about a 180 bushel average. That would be compared to 235 bushels of corn they averaged last year. And many southwest of Assumption, Illinois, have just started, but the test weights are low, which will cause problems as well. So that report coming in, and we'll be getting more, of course, as we get more into the harvest season. The drought situation is interesting. Yesterday I received the up-to-the-minute drought maps for the U.S., and just quickly scanning them, the winter wheat areas experiencing drought, approximately 23% of winter wheat production is within an area that's experiencing drought. And then what about cattle-producing areas? Well, about 12% of cattle inventory is within an area experiencing drought. The hay areas experiencing drought, about 17% of hay acreage in the U.S. within an area experiencing drought. And the drought monitor is still showing the worst drought situation in North Dakota and Montana. But it now seems to have moved more toward Montana, moving west out of North Dakota. But there is some exceptional drought and extreme drought showing up on the map in Montana. Corn areas experiencing drought, about 12% of the corn acreage in the United States. Soybean area, about 14%. Of soybean production is within an area experiencing drought. So that's the drought side of the picture. And here in McHenry County, in my front and backyard and my neighbors, I don't think there's been rain for about 4 or 5 weeks that's been able to slow down the dryness that we're having. So it's dry, but if it stays that way for harvest time, it'll be good. So now let's go down to Florida and to the Southeast. Some comments there that we've gotten from members of the Farm Foundation Roundtable who have shared, just a few days ago, some of their comments about the situation there. Mike Martin, who is president of Florida Gulf Coast University in Fort Myers, took a direct hit. Buildings held up fairly well, but trees, signs, and so on did not. We have housed up to 2,000 in our sports arena with 500 people still there and no idea when and where they will go. Plus a nursing home evacuated and a number of very special needs elderly to one of their classroom buildings. Jack Payne, who is Senior Vice President of Ag and Natural Resources at the University of Florida, provided this report to us. The devastation caused by Irma to production agriculture in Florida is tremendous. The research of the University of Florida has 13 ag research stations from Pensacola to Homestead, south of Miami. All of them, with the exception of Pensacola, receive damage, and some have very significant damage, especially the three located in Homestead, Belglade, and Immokalee. On most of the stations, we lost all of our hoop buildings and had significant damage to shade houses and greenhouses, with one completely destroyed. The biggest impact to production is in the south and central parts of Florida. 50 to 60% of citrus fruit was blown off the trees. Many of the growers are flooded. This will have a long-term impact on the health of the trees with regard to soil-borne diseases. Trees are uprooted in many areas. Irrigation systems have been pulled from the ground and pump houses upended. Vegetables, nothing fortunately has been planted, but the plastic that has been laid and the mounds that were constructed have been destroyed. 1 acre of plastic is about $2,000, and most of it is gone. Sugar cane, blown down, flooded fields, some cane uprooted, and widespread damage to farm building power lines to remote areas, and power will be out many weeks. Many roads have been washed out. Exotic crops, well, dragon fruit and others, totally underwater. Avocado, mangoes, bananas in many areas, totally destroyed. Rice, 100% loss of the rice crop. And it goes on and on and on with similar reports from farmers in the Florida southwestern area. And thanks to the folks at the Farm Foundation for checking in to provide us with those reports on what's happening as we try to recover agriculturally from the storm. I've gotten probably a dozen or so emails saying, so what's my orange juice going to cost? Well, it'll go up, no doubt, because the orange groves in southwestern Florida were heavily damaged. The one saving point here is that much of our orange juice is being imported from South America, particularly from Brazil. So it's a storm that we're going to be talking about for probably 2 or 3 years as we try to recover the infrastructure. And the other problem is the flooded land and the problem of getting in to get that working again. We're at 23 minutes after 5 o'clock here on the Saturday morning show. And I've been involved with the Illinois Agricultural Leadership Program for, well, quite a few years, going back to the late 70s. And the foundation made the announcement this week that the class of 2018 has now passed the halfway point in their seminar program, and they are beginning to prepare for their international study seminar to Hong Kong, Taiwan, and Vietnam. But at the same time, the foundation is starting to pursue the next class of up-and-coming leaders in Illinois agriculture. The application for the foundation class of 2020 is now available. And so if you've talked to friends and neighbors who have done this program, it's a 2-year program, and have said, hey, I'd like to go on that sometime, now is the time to get your application forms for the next class that will be announced a year from now. Illinois Ag Leadership Foundation, and you can get more information at agleadership.org. agleadership.org, the address for getting more information on that program. Coming up to 25 minutes after 5 here on the Saturday Morning Show, it's WGN Radio Chicago, and we'll continue in a minute or so. This week, Governor Rauner is traveling in China. It's his first international trade mission, and he arrived in Shanghai for the next stop in his first international trade mission of his administration. The Chinese People's Association for Friendship with Foreign Countries greeted the governor and the team of Illinois delegates working to build stronger business, cultural, and educational relationships with its Asian partners. And I'm hoping that agriculture will enter into the discussion during his trip to China, because Illinois is the number two soybean-producing state in the country, and China is the biggest buyer of our soybeans. And they continued to buy. I look back at some of the amounts of soybean purchases by China going back to the 1st of August. They have been extremely active. So Governor Rauner has an agricultural mission, I hope, in improving trade with China. On the other hand, we have people from Taiwan here in the United States. This is something that Taiwan has been doing for decades. They bring buying teams to the United States to call attention to the fact that Taiwan is a good customer of agricultural products from the United States. And on Wednesday of this week, the mission pledged to purchase 5 million metric tons, that's 197 million bushels of U.S. corn, and 500,000 tons of U.S. distillers' dried grains with solubles, DDGs as we call them. And they have committed to make those purchases between 2018 and 2019. They'll be visiting several state capitals as well to sign additional buying agreements of our agricultural products. And the chair lady of the U.S. Grains Council, Deb Keller, a corn farmer from Iowa, said the U.S. Grains Council has worked in Taiwan for more than 4 decades and has watched Taiwan grow into one of our largest customers. I've had the opportunity over the years to travel with several trade missions from the U.S. Grains Council, and that personal contact between the producer in the U.S. and the buyer in China is important to maintaining a good volume of exports from here to Asia and other countries in the world. Well, that brings us to the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday Morning Show on Chicago's very own WGN Radio and WGN.com. And good morning again. If you've just joined us, good morning to you. It looks like another beautiful day here in the Midwest. But one of the items I'm going to talk about a little bit later, as a matter of fact, in about half a minute or so, tomorrow marks the beginning of National Farm Safety and Health Week, and it will continue through next Sunday, so we'll talk more about that on Samuelson Says, which is brought to you by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947, out there in Eldora, Iowa. This week, we do want to talk safety. The folks at Wink Products Company want to help make your life easier with a family of professional strength cleaning products. Products that really work. Wink Rust Stain Remover is the number one liquid rust stain remover in the country. This professional strength formula dissolves the ugly rust stains on white sinks and toilet bowls, color-fast fabrics, and carpets. This little brown bottle has been around since 1947, and it is still number one. To learn where to find quality Wink products, check it out at WHINK.com. National Farm Safety and Health Week, observed September 17 through the 23rd this year. It's been going on for decades, and we keep trying to cut down the accident and death toll on farms and ranches across the country. So my motto is be safe and be well, and be very much aware of the dangers that lurk for adults and children on farms and ranches. Let me go through a few of them. Dangers in grain bins and manure lagoons. As a matter of fact, later on this week in agribusiness, we will focus on grain bin safety. Tractor turnovers, another area of extreme danger. Careless treatment of harvest machines. They are not toys and should never be left running while working on them. And then there are the blind four-way country road intersections, cutting down visibility of approaching automobiles from the right or the left. And quite a few years ago, I was talking to a farmer who said, you know, I was going to do something on the combine and leave it running while I did. And then I got to thinking, what if something goes wrong? How would my wife and children survive if I weren't around to head up the operation? Well, think about that. The next time you think about taking a shortcut to save time, it may be more costly than you can ever imagine. Be safe, be well. The theme for me for National Farm Safety and Health Week, September 17 through the 23rd. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
A presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. And it has an interesting history because back in the 1960s, when we had the National Safety Council, that council started National Farm Safety Week. And it's been going ever since, but different organizations now have joined in observing National Farm Safety Week. Insurance companies, for example, and the National Farm Medicine Center in Marshfield, Wisconsin. It's also the home of the National Children's Center. And then they have added the health coverage to the week as well. The AgriSafe Network webinar, Children and Youth, Living, Working, and Playing Safely on Farms, will be presented at 1 o'clock Central Time this Wednesday, September 20th. And the webinar will focus on the National Farm Safety and Health Week theme of putting farm safety into practice. And it features the newly released Agricultural Youth Work Guidelines. These guidelines can help parents and supervisors assign age-appropriate tasks to young people, because if you're growing up on a farm, you're going to want to drive the tractor when you're 8 years old. And I know I started driving when I was 8 years old, didn't do it much, but that, of course, never makes it past the OSHA people today. So according to the center in Marshfield, too many injuries and deaths are associated with youth performing agricultural work that does not match their development level ability. And so guidelines such as these offered by the National Children's Center for Rural and Agricultural Health and Safety at the Marshfield Clinic will help parents and supervisors determine if their child is able to safely perform various farm tasks. So keep that in mind. And on our weekend television show, we're doing a story with Dave Newcomb at the Illinois Fire Safety Institute, who is also working with first responders on one of the threats we have at harvest time, which is engulfment in a grain bin. Because this set of points really hit home with me. It only takes 4 seconds for an adult to sink knee-deep in flowing grain. And at this point, the worker cannot free themselves without help. An adult can be completely buried in less than 20 seconds in a grain bin. Most engulfed victims don't survive. And every fall at harvest time, we have to report on several tragedies involving children and adults in engulfment in grain bins. So keep that in mind, because we want to keep you around. We really do. This week, we sat down with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services to talk markets, and both Max and I will be talking to Greg when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services, joins us to talk markets. And since we've just come out of a September crop report, any surprises there for you?
Well, it was a big surprise that the yield actually went up from the August report, when most people thought the August report was a little bit of a strange thing. So I think people are shaking their heads a little bit. Those of us that are on the ground looking at things are having a hard time justifying the type of yields that were presented. And when you look at the weather maps and look at the late season dryness that came from mid-August through early September, it's hard to believe that we're going to match those expectations that the USDA has set.
And as far as maturity on the corn crop, it's slower than normal, isn't it?
It's behind a couple weeks in most cases. But luckily, fortunately, we haven't had an early end to the growing season, and it doesn't look like that. It looks like a warming trend right now for mid-month into the latter part of the month. So it looks like we'll be able to finish the crop, but I don't think we had the moisture that we would have liked to have seen in many cases.
I looked over the numbers of soybean exports to China from the 1st of August till the present. They have been very active in the bean market.
They've been very active. Maybe they're sensing that the crop isn't what the USDA says it is. The weakness, the two-year lows recently in the dollar have helped keeping us very competitive in the marketplace, and we've seen bean and corn sales both strong here to start the season.
From early in the season right on through, we're watching those crop updates every Monday afternoon come out, showing us the crop progress, and you look at the condition ratings, and you guys in the trade hang on them. But there's this disconnect anymore. What's the deal here? Will you watch them as closely next year?
Well, it's the one gauge we have. It's the one thing we have to talk about, you know, after Monday night when these reports are released. But we're now looking at it and going, can we really use this data to help us come up with yield potentials? And that's a big question right now. And if the overall yield stays as high as the USA projects when harvest actually gets underway here later this month and next, we're going to have to rethink those measures, and perhaps it's the technology gains that we've had in the last 10 to 15 years that are helping move that needle.
A month from now, we'll know a lot more, won't we?
We sure will.
We'll be watching those yield monitor reports and the social media tweets out there coming in from the field. What's your gut feeling on what we'll see when the combines start rolling?
Well, I think the yields are going to come in a little bit below what the USDA is saying. It's a good crop. Yields so far coming out of the south and into the southeast have been good. They've been at or above expectations in those areas. But my feeling is, as we get up into the heart of the main production areas, we're not going to find the yield meeting or exceeding expectations, and certainly nothing close to last year from what I can tell.
We watched closely those hurricanes, and there were instances, as we saw in photographs in the social media, where farms were hit hard. But generally speaking, the impact was not substantial.
I don't think so. I mean, if that hurricane last week had gone up the east coast of Florida, impacted the Carolinas, it could have been a different story for them. But fortunately, it came up and kind of died out there in Georgia, and certainly impacted some people in that region. But the rainfall amounts just weren't, you know, as huge as what had been projected.
We have more for you. Don't go away, sir. Greg Groh with Archer Financial Services. We'll be back here. Back at the desk with us this weekend is Greg Groh from Archer Financial Services. When we get into the harvest, we still have some of this old crop corn sitting around out there. Will there be some bottlenecks in a few spots?
I think that we saw a lot of old crop corn finally move out of farmers' hands right at the end of August, just before Labor Day weekend. So with industrial demand staying pretty good, export demand staying pretty good, I think a lot of the last year's corn is going to move into the pipeline. I think it won't be quite the problem maybe that some have been talking about. We've added a lot of storage in the last 10 to 15 years across the country, and you know, I think that we'll have enough places to put it. And but old crop corn certainly weighed on the market as we went into the latter part of the summer.
What's your gut feeling about the weeks ahead in terms of market prices? Could we see a little bit of a bump during harvest, given the price levels we have now?
I think it's going to be tough to mount any sustained rallies. We could have some technical rallies. If the yield would happen to come in at or below some of the thinking, I mean, if we saw the USDA drop things in October substantially, you could see a little pickup in price. But, you know, it's going to be tough. The $3.90 to $4 range in this year's corn, March corn, up in that range is going to meet a lot of resistance. And there's just a lot of corn around in the world with Brazil's big crop last year. So we don't want to see our price get too high in the global stage, or we'll start to lose some of that business. And our market share has already been falling. We're expecting around a 30% market share in the global corn trade this year. Certainly don't want to see it below that. So we want to keep prices competitive to keep this product moving.
Back to the hurricane impact for a moment. Will that add to imports from South America coming into the southeastern part of the country?
Haven't seen much about that. I don't think that it's going to be an issue in a big way this year, as it has been in the past, just because we have had the price stay subdued. I imagine there will be some imports into the Delmira Peninsula area into right. Wilmington. But beyond that, I don't think it's going to be a big factor this year.
And the livestock picture, are we going to get out of this up and down roller coaster on cattle?
It's been quite a market to try and analyze. It's really, I have had a hard time coming up with, you know, ways to explain the volatility that we see at times. I think as far as this market right now, we have a fairly large supply of cattle to work through here in the fourth quarter. But it's possible that the market's trying to sense a bit of a low. We'll have to watch and see how demand rebounds in the restaurant trade after the hurricanes that we've been through. Hopefully we don't have any more of those types of experiences. And we'll set some type of a fall low and advance into the spring. Cattle supplies, though, going into the first quarter of next year look to be to stage a pretty good drop. So I'm optimistic going into the first quarter of next year.
But we look at ample supplies of pork, poultry, and beef right now.
It's hard to mount any kind of a sustained rally. Last spring, we had a very strong rally in cattle that exceeded a lot of expectations. I doubt if we repeat that this year.
We thank you very much for sharing your expertise with us. A visit with Greg Groh of Archer Financial Services. It's the Saturday morning show on WGN Radio Chicago, and a great weekend to visit a farmer's market in your community. They still are continuing and probably will until Halloween. As a matter of fact, I see some of the farmers markets in our area in McHenry County already gearing up for the pumpkin season at Halloween time. And generally, you'll find farmers markets stay open until then, and then the crop season is pretty well over. But take the opportunity to visit with farmers and producers of your food and buy what they're getting up right now. As a matter of fact, they've been up quite a while, I'm sure, picking the produce while it's at its freshest, and they'll be taking it into Saturday farmers markets across the Midwest. As we looked at closing market activity this week in the grain market, soybeans did drop slightly yesterday, profit-taking. But the benchmark Chicago Board of Trade November contract still recorded a fourth straight weekly advance, supported by firm cash markets and by export demand that we talked about earlier. Wheat also up on short covering and worries about dry conditions in Australia now, while corn closed modestly higher in range-bound trade. So as we looked at yesterday's closing prices at the Chicago Board of Trade, the December wheat contract ended at $4.49 a bushel. That was a gain of 5.25 cents. Meanwhile, December corn only gained a half cent a bushel yesterday, and it will start trading Monday morning at $3.54¾ a bushel. Soybeans that dropped 7½ cents yesterday on the profit taking will start trading Monday morning at $9.68¾. Now, interestingly enough, the market here is having an impact on what Brazil farmers will be planting, because Brazil is now the biggest soybean producer in the world. But preparation for the next soy and corn crops are behind schedule in the run-up to the planting season in Brazil. And factors hampering planting also include exchange rate volatility that affects fertilizer purchases and excess bureaucracy for accessing rural credit lines. A farmer who plants 3,400 hectares of soybeans in Mato Grosso, which is the largest state producing soybeans in Brazil, said he prefers to buy inputs in advance, but this year he's postponed purchases due to next crop's potentially lower margins. So they're getting ready to plant, we're getting ready to harvest, and have already started on opposite ends of the planet. So we'll keep an eye on that. And then turning to the livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange, we ended the week with a pretty good day. At the Mercantile Exchange, the October lean hog contract gained $2.05 a hundredweight, and it'll start Monday's trade at $60.97. October live cattle gained a dollar yesterday to end the week, and the starting price Monday will be $107.75. The October feeder cattle contract gained $1.12 a hundredweight yesterday, and will start trade Monday at $150.65. And then the final note this morning, back to the NAFTA trade agreement that is being renegotiated right now between the three country participants, Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. And I'll tell you, the agricultural people from Canada and Mexico are hard at work trying to convince the U.S. that agricultural trade plays an important role in the economies of, well, in this case, Canada and the United States, because the Trade Minister McCauley of Canada came to New Orleans this week to deliver a keynote address at the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, NASDA, had their annual meeting. And during his point, Trade Minister McCauley made these points. Canada and the U.S. are each other's largest trade partners for agriculture, with agricultural trade reaching $62 billion. Canada is the top agriculture and agri-food export market for 29 U.S. states. Canada-U.S. trade supports millions of middle-class jobs on both sides of the border. They are lobbying heavily to make sure that the agreement that is hammered out will still be favorable to agricultural producers. Well, thank you for joining us here on this Saturday morning. You have a great weekend, and make it a safe one as we start National Farm Safety and Health Week tomorrow. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.